It's time to get chiseled with Rob Hamadani.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Chiseled. And why do we call it Chiseled? Because we're all work in progress. I'm Rob Commodore. I'm your host. I'm the author of Better You Think. And I have a really unique, cool guest here today that we're going to talk to. His name is Beau Parfait, and he is currently the managing principal of DLP Capital. He's founder and CEO of Denali Venture Philanthropy, which there's a reason behind that. We'll get into that a little bit. He's the author of the book, Die Trying, which I'm telling you, everybody, is an amazing book, amazing stories of some mountain climbing that Beau has done. And he's considered himself a ski mountaineer. And I'll let him tell you about that a little bit. Beau's married for 13 years now, has two sons, ages 11 and 7. And at some point in time, I think they have a goal to climb the 50 highest peaks in every state. Is that correct, Beau?
That's correct.
So welcome to the show, Beau, and thank you for being on Chiseled. And we're going to talk about how you've been chiseled in your lifetime. But I met Beau at a retreat. I met Beau about, I guess it was in March, the end of March, at what we call the Legendary Retreat with Tommy Breedlove. And we connected. I'm going to tell you a little bit about that. But Beau, let's start with that. You were at the retreat. What does it mean to you to be legendary?
Thanks, Rob. And thanks for having me on the show. We did meet at their Legendary Retreat. And I think, you know, what does it mean to be legendary? There's a lot to unpack there. But I think that you have to start with this. So there's the two most important moments of your life are the moment you're born and then the moment you know why. And when you know your why, right, which is an unfolding for many people, when you know your why, then you can become legendary.
And that is so powerful. Was that a Mark Twain quote, I think, if I'm not mistaken?
It may be.
Yeah, I've always heard the day you were born and the day you found out why. I love that. It's so powerful. I just hope people understand that because, you know, we're all born into this life and some of us go through it on autopilot, not knowing what our purpose is or what we're called to do. But the moment you find out why, and I totally love how you equated that to becoming legendary. So,
and to your point, and to legendary, you know, it's a lot of people could approach that differently. And Rob, I'd be curious to hear what you have to say, but if I break my life up into three buckets, so I have me, you know, my personal, right? So me as a person, my family, and then the third bucket would be business, my career. So personal, family, and business. And, you know, the goal is to for all three of those to be on high octane, all working towards your why. And by the way, your why, for some people, it could be one sentence. For some people, it could be, you know, a lot of things, right? 10 sentences or something like that. So for the audience listening, there's no wrong answer, right? But when you know your why and you build those buckets around it, then you can start being, in my humble opinion, living a legendary life.
Yeah, I agree with that. So to answer your question for me, I've been in this real estate world for 21 years or so, and I look at these five spheres of influence in my life, or as you put it, five buckets. And I look at the spiritual bucket, my family bucket, my financial bucket, my business bucket, and then my personal bucket. Those are the five areas. And I think you hit another nail on the head. There's no right or wrong answer. What does legendary mean to you? And for me, you know, it's like really being the best I can be in all those areas, knowing that I'm not going to be top notch in every area at all times. I think we're always learning to grow, right? We're a work in progress, right?
Yeah, we're a work in progress.
Yeah. So something happened really interesting that I learned about Beau. I'm going to tell you what he did for me first. It's really touched my heart. And then something really unique about Beau. So we're at this conference or retreat, let's call it. And it was nine guys and the presenter, Tommy Breedlove. And we were just going through all these different subjects and topics and content for 3 days, 4 nights, I think it was, or 3 nights, 4 days. And my son was in a process of applying to some colleges, and Beau went to Colorado State for a little while. And I was just telling him, hey, my son's thinking about going to Colorado State. Next thing I know, Beau says, hey, I'll write a letter of recommendation for him. So Bo's like, we're on a break, and he calls my son up on a break and just asks him these questions. My son answers them, and then Beau just helps him write a letter of recommendation to the college. Now, nothing came of it, but what touched me was that I know Beau for maybe 2 or 3 days at that point. Known a little, we'd taken a couple of walks, and for somebody that's willing to do that for me and my son, I was in tears when I shared that with the group that day. If you remember that, Beau, so thank you again for that.
you know, I was honored to do it. And another benefit of this retreat, and for someone that wants to become legendary or impactful in their world or their community, I think, you know, doing a, for me, doing 1 to 2 retreats a year where you kind of unplug for 2 or 3 days, you share vulnerability, right? Vulnerability is very key. And you and I both did that. And when you're vulnerable and you share your, you know, your things that you're working on, your challenges, and you get people working together to try to be the best you can be, you really get to know people very, very quickly. So it was an honor and privilege for me to help you and your son out in that regard.
And I'm very grateful for that. It's funny because I just said this to Bo the other day. It's like we met each other for 3 or 4 days. We've had a couple conversations, and I feel like I'm going to be a friend with this guy for life. So it's just an awesome feeling. So let's talk about the unique thing real quick. So when Bo introduced himself, he introduced himself as somebody who has climbed the 7 summits. And what does that mean? It's they're the tallest mountains in each of the 7 continents. So he's climbed all 7 summits, and he's actually written a book, Die Trying, which tells the stories about that. So we're not going to go deep into the book, but what in the heck got in your mind and your brain to sit there and say, I'm going to climb the 7 highest summits in the world?
So for me, and maybe a lot of the people that are going to listen to this in the audience, is all of us at some point, I shouldn't say all of us, many of us at some point have obstacles, you know, in our life. So for me, I was dyslexic. I had a speech impediment, and I had a separated family. My parents got divorced. So for me, I really struggled to learn in school. There was about an 8-year period there where it was really difficult. Every day going to school was very, very painful. And then to top it all off, I had this speech impediment. So I kind of, that affected me. And I would love to tell you that, and the story that I often tell is I overheard my second grade teacher at a parent teacher conference telling my parents that I would never graduate high school. Okay. And I'd love to tell you, I went home that night and said, hey, I'm going to prove that teacher wrong. And, you know, but no, I went home that night and I cried my eyes out because I thought something was really wrong with me. And for the audience listening, whether it's a physical or mental disability, you know, for whatever reason, right? A lot of people have these struggles, and how you deal with them is very challenging, and there's no easy roadmap. But one of my mentors just kind of said to me, this is a little bit later in life, is if you find something that you really love and you excel at doing, do that and get really good at doing it. You know, go 100 miles deep. Put in the 10,000 hours, and then that will give you the confidence to go and achieve, you know, all these other things in life, you know, school or whatever it is, right? Being a better person. So to end the story, I worked my butt off, and now I was in 7th grade, and my teacher in 7th grade told my parents, I've got good news. Bo's going to graduate high school, but not college. I was like, oh man.
Wow.
So I did end up graduating college at Colorado State University. And I worked full time while at a restaurant while going to college. I worked year round and went to school year round. And I have 2 master's degrees. But what I discovered in Colorado is I really fell in love with the mountain climbing and the passion. And that just made everything so much easier. Right. So I'm a big fan of people finding their passion. And I climbed some 14,000 foot peaks, you know, the 14ers, as many of the people listening probably know about. So they're mountains that are over 14,000 feet tall. I heard about Kilimanjaro. Kilimanjaro is the tallest mountain in Africa. And while I was working at JP Morgan, I took my first vacation and I barely made it to the top of Kilimanjaro. And Rob, it wasn't until the way down that one of my climbing partner said to me, Bo, so you're going to do the 7 summits. I said, what's that? He said, it's the tallest mountain on each continent. You just did one of them. You got 6 or 7 more, depending on what list you want to do. And it had never crossed my mind, but I'm like, you know what? I had such a good time on Kilimanjaro. It was so challenging. I want to go climb the next one and see what happens. So that's a little bit of kind of how I got into doing the 7 summits and how I got into mountain climbing.
So if I could ask you real quick, I've read the book, most of the book. I got a few more pages to go, but it seemed like early on you didn't know a lot about what you were doing, didn't have a lot of preparation, and there was a bow that had maybe an ego back then, right? And so it seemed like the first couple mountains you climbed, you were like the frustrated, impatient guy, egotist, I just want to get to the top and say I did it. And then you learned that, hey, I got to be on the other side of this and be patient, be smart, be prepared. And it's interesting how I'm reading this book. I'm like, God, this guy, this is cool. So I guess the question I have here, when the first couple mountains you climbed, you felt like you really weren't prepared. Did you just feel like, hey, I could do anything I want to do because I'm Bo and I'm just going to force my way to the top?
So it's a great question, Rob. And it's a funny story. So I was working at JP Morgan in New York City. I was an investment banker, right? So you work 90-100 hours a week. And I was about 50 pounds overweight. So right now I'm 170 pounds. I was probably 230 pounds, 220, 230. I fluctuated in between. So I was pretty overweight. We were all working our butts off. So I went in and I talked to my boss about, and I was like, hey, I want to take 5 days off of work and go climb Kilimanjaro. And he kind of looked down at my belly and he goes, well, what makes you think what makes you think you're going to make it, Bo? And I'm like, I'm determined guy. And if I focus on it, he goes, yeah, but you work a lot. And he goes, do you have time to train? And again, he looks down at my belly again. And I could kind of see what he was saying. And I said, well, that's true. I was kind of hoping that my just dogged determination would get me up there. And then he said something to me, Rob, that really started a new trajectory in my life. And he said, Bo, if you want to do something and have more energy than you could possibly imagine, what you should do is you should climb this mountain, not for yourself, but for something bigger than yourself.
That's so powerful there. Keep going.
He said, go think about that and then come back and talk to me. So I did. I'll pause there.
Because you were going to just climb this mountain for yourself.
And then
you did this. You raised some money, some sponsorship money to put some kids through school and whatnot. And that's part of the philanthropy piece for you. So what was there? Did you have to think about that long? Or what? That was a profound statement. I'm going to do that. Did you hem and haw about that?
I did. I remember going back and thinking, that it was a very good comment because it hit me like a ton of bricks. And it also made sense to me. Like some of my forefathers and family had, we had always kind of given back, but it was my first time kind of as an adult going, hey, you know what? I'm not going to give back because my parents, because I'm a teenager or 10th grade going to volunteer somewhere. I'm actually going to do this as an adult and for me. So it was a big way for me to step kind of into my own adulthood, if you will, Rob. Uh-huh. And then it was a really cool. So I realized that I wanted to set up an educational scholarship. I realized that, Africa they need many things, but one of the main things they need is they need doctors because they need doctors to help people. So for about $15,000 approximately, if I raised that money, we could find two poor Africans that were from shanty towns. And there was an organization that would find these kids at young ages who had potential. And for $15,000, we could put two people through medical school. And it was awesome. So I went back. So I figured out that JP Morgan has a foundation. JP Morgan also donates to into the continent of Africa. So I got to meet all these cool people at JP Morgan in the foundation, very senior people. I kind of got to tell them about the project I was doing. I'm going to climb Kilimanjaro. We're going to create two doctors. This is going to be great. I very quickly raised the money. And then the best part of it was, fast forward to today, both of these doctors have saved over 10,000 lives.
That's incredible. And you've had the opportunity to meet one or two of them, I think, correct?
I have. Yep. I've met both of them. Yeah.
And how fulfilling is that? How fulfilling is that? I'm sorry to interrupt.
Yeah. Oh, it's very fulfilling. It's very fulfilling. And one of these days, when I go back to Africa, I can now bring my kids with me and they'll get to, they'll meet this organization and we'll get to meet all the folks that we've helped over there over the years.
That's incredible. So my takeaway from that conversation just now is putting meaning behind whatever you're doing. And I, you know, like I'm in real estate. I remember first getting into real estate, you know, okay, just sell as many houses as you can, make as much money as you can and live as, you know, nice as you can. And that's about me. But when you put meaning behind it, I think it takes you to another place, like you said, and demonstrate it. And you're going to, the audience is going to hear another podcast from a friend of mine who he owned a Cold Stone Creamery and his employees found meaning and coming to work every day and scooping ice cream. And it just built a great culture within the, in the company. So it's not, you're going to hear this more than once in my, through my podcast and in life, that find meaning in whatever you're doing. And it's just going to, you know, it's going to take you to higher places. So Bo, you know, you faced death, you almost experienced death yourself. You've seen people pass away. When you see that or experience that, is there like, am I lucky? Am I cutting it too close? Or man, was God there at the moment? You're like, okay, God, do you say a prayer when you experience that? What are those feelings like? What are those thoughts like in those moments?
When you climb big mountains like I do, and I'm, you know, if somebody is a race car driver or an extreme scuba diver, right? Skydiver, right? Or people even fishing in Alaska, right? You could get eaten by a bear. So, but for the mountain climbing that I often do, there's inherent risks. And you know, the big scary ones I don't do anymore because I have, you know, a great wife and kids. But when I was younger, there were people that, you know, where, you know, someone that had, we had just passed, or they were just behind me, you know, seconds and minutes away, where they were killed and I wasn't, you know, or we weren't. And, you know, having faith in God has been very important to me. And, you know, God works in mysterious ways. And I'll never forget when we were doing this canoe race in Belize. So there's a canoe race in Belize, and the t-shirts would say, "Can you Belize it?"
Oh, geez.
Like, canoe Belize it. Kind of
that's
funny.
Cool. Yeah, it's cool.
Called the La Ruta Maya canoe race. It's very fun. For those listening, you can Google it and check it out. But it was like a 4-day, approximately a 4-day canoe race, 200 and something miles. And I remember there were three of us in the canoe, and it was the start of, I think, the second or third day. And there was some serious rapids, and we got pinned. We kind of got sucked off to the side, and we got pinned under this tree in very strong current. And we were all pinned, and it wasn't just a tree. It was like, it was almost like this huge beaver dam. It was like a bunch of fallen trees on the side of the river. And I just remember getting pinned under there and thinking, this is it. I can't move. And then all of a sudden I felt this bubble of calm kind of come over me, and I just broke free. I didn't do it. I just, you know, I would say that God did it. So I broke free, and we all kind of emerged. And Rob, here's the crazy part. When we emerged, we all took stock of the situation. And we were pinned underwater for a long time. None of us had our life jackets on.
That's something else.
No, I didn't take mine off.
Wow.
Richard and Jonathan didn't take theirs off.
Oh, so you had them on, and when you surfaced, they were gone.
They were gone.
Wow.
None of us had, and they were gone.
How did that happen, right?
Yeah. How did that happen?
Wow. So you've faced, you know, death in a scary sense, but then like you've climbed to the top of these mountains, or you've accomplished these feats. Like I'm picturing you at the top of a mountain, right? I picture you looking at overseeing everything. And it takes me back to when I saw the Grand Canyon for the first time. And you know, you're not climbing up, but you're looking down, and it's like, you know, thousands and thousands of feet down. And there's just an awe. An awness. There's a presence. And I like to tell people, like, you can like feel the spirit. You can even see it and hear it at times. So when you're at the top of a mountain, like, do you feel that? And I don't know if you know what I mean, but do you feel it? Do you see it? And you just know it's there.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's really, so on the way down, 80% of mountaineering accidents happen on the way down. And you can really feel it then too, you know, kind of that protective spirit, if you will. And it's a beautiful feeling.
Well, I can imagine. So I don't want to tell my wife I'm going to climb Everest at age 55. So that's not going to happen, I'm sure. But I can imagine a picture that I was asked to climb Kilimanjaro back in February, and I didn't do it because it was during Valentine's Day, and I wasn't going to leave my lovely bride to climb Kilimanjaro. So.
I think we may have talked about that. So Rob, are you going to go back and climb Kilimanjaro?
I don't know. I would like to. I would really like to. I'd have to get approval from my wife, but I would like to. So like, there's something here that I want to actually, if you don't mind, I'm going to read something here because I thought it was amazing, what you said, and people got to be careful not to take this to the nth degree, but it's a quote that you have in your book from William Arthur Ward. It says, "To live is to risk dying. To hope is to risk despair. To try is to risk failure. But risk must be taken because the greatest hazard in life is to risk nothing." I'm not reading the whole paragraph here, but that's so powerful. So, you know, some people would say, well, I'm not going to risk climbing Mount Everest, but what risk aren't you taking? What would you say to that?
When I do a lot of speaking, and I always talk about, you know, everyone has their own Everest, right? We all have our own Everest, whatever that means. And, you know, there's no judgment. I think we all work hard not to have judgment in our lives. And I know I do. And, you know, it maybe for some people it's, you know what, I want to run a three mile race. Right. And I haven't ran in 20 or 30 years. Right. Take that risk. You know, there was a great, you know, these kind of, when you write a book, you don't expect these things to happen, but I think, Rob, I may have mentioned this to you before, but somebody read my book and they sent me a message, and it was a woman who was a nurse, and she had been physically and mentally abused by her husband for many, many years. And she had always wanted to go to medical school. And, you know, her husband said, well, you're not smart enough. There's, you know, so on and so forth. There's no way you're going to do it. So, you know, she read my book. And again, if it weren't my book, it would have been someone else's book, but it just happened to catch her at the right time. Right, the right moment, and she jumped off that cliff of change, right? She climbed her Everest. What a risk, right?
Yes.
She had to leave states and get away from this guy, and now she's now a doctor, and you know she's now chasing her dream, and that's her Everest. So everyone's Everest is different. They're all unique. And I think a lot of people ask me, say, what was the hardest part about Everest or the seven summits? Right. And if I said the same thing to her, what was the hardest part about leaving your husband, you know, going to medical school? I bet you she'd say what I'd say. It's deciding to do it.
Wow. Just making the decision to do it.
That's the hardest part.
But then you come across this thing called fear, right?
Yeah.
and how does Bo coach himself through fear? Because I think that's where we're going to lead into this broadening effect thing. We're going to talk a little bit about that, but how do you coach yourself through fear?
So I talk about the circle of comfort. So I'm going to describe this because I know some people are listening to this. Maybe some are watching, but your circle of comfort, when you're younger, it's very small. And inside and frankly, for people when they're older, it's small too. Your circle of comfort, everything inside your circle of comfort is everything that makes you feel safe and good. So it's, you know, it's Taco Tuesday. It's it's, you know, my cozy bed. It's this, my breakfast. It's the coffee I have, you know, it's the gym that I go to, right? I like sitting in my car. It's, hey, on Fridays and Saturdays, we hang out with our friends, right? It's everything you're doing that's inside your circle of comfort. The moment you do something outside of that circle of comfort, there's a lot of fear. So Rob, for you, like if you did Kilimanjaro, that's outside of your circle of comfort because you haven't done that before.
Correct.
So if you can accept that you're going to have fear, but push through it and do it anyway, and you start to do things outside of your circle of comfort, well, guess what? Your circle of comfort expands. And then you keep expanding and expanding your circle of comfort, and you keep expanding your impact on the world, right? And that's what's pretty cool about it. So this circle of comfort, and for your kids, for those who are listening, have kids, you know, it could be just having them try a new food, right? Hey, try this piece of salmon. Oh, I don't like fish. I want a chicken tender. So even for them, it's expanding your circle of comfort. But you have to push through fear, because on the other side of fear is freedom.
And so you talk about the acceptance of fear, because it's going to be there. You can't avoid it. It's there. So is that Bo's first step? Okay, I am enveloped by fear. Okay, Bo, I'm going to accept this now. Then you say to yourself, what's next?
Yep. And I want to add one more point. You know, this is I heard this the other day. So a lot of people's fear is this, is, you know, 30 years ago, Rob, the average American had three friends. Okay. Today, the average American has 1.5 friends.
Whew.
Okay. I'm still trying to figure out how you get a half a friend, but, but if you, the definition, a common acceptance definition of loneliness is if you have less than three friends.
Oh.
And how that affects your health is if you have less than three friends and you are lonely, then that's the equivalent of smoking 20 cigarettes a day.
Well, I never heard that. It's interesting. Say that again.
So if you have the average American right now has 1.5 friends, okay, which is that if you're below three, that's a common definition of loneliness.
Loneliness, right.
And loneliness is not good for your health. And it's the equivalent of smoking about 20 cigarettes a day.
That's interesting. Wow.
So there's fear there, right? To get outside of my circle of comfort, meet new people, you know, join an organization, join a nonprofit, there's a lot to that. It's easy to say, it's hard to do for many people. Is that fair?
Yeah, very fair. Cause it's almost like we're talking about climbing 14, 20, 29,000 foot mountains and the fear there and the big step there, but it's all relative. It could be something is asking a girl or asking a guy out, right? There's fear there. So there's going to be fear and there's possible rejection. So just keep moving through it, whether it's just paying person a compliment, maybe it's taking on a new job or a new career, whatever it is, the fear is always going to be there. You just need to push through it. And it's always good to have one of those, at least three friends to help, you know, encourage you through the process. I think yeah. I would agree with that. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. And Rob, it's important to note too, we've talked about this in the past, but a great way to get through that fear is to create these layers and kind of build off an experience. So, you know, we talked about, so let's just use examples are good. So Kilimanjaro, I went to Kilimanjaro. We set up the educational scholarship. You know, we've got doctors now saving lives, right? So layer number one was Kilimanjaro. Layer number two was meeting a bunch of people at JP Morgan that I never would have met. Layer number three was they wrote an article about what I was doing. So I got some more notoriety within JP Morgan. Number three is we got to, you know, fund the doctors, right, who are saving lives. Number four is I wrote the book, Seven Summits, which has had a huge impact on people's lives. That's layer number four. Number five is I went back to Kilimanjaro and I was part of a scientific research project. And we discovered 29 new species on Kilimanjaro. I would have never. And then I also joined the Explorers Club.
Yeah, I saw that.
That's another layer. So to create we call them these delicious layering cakes of life. But it all starts somewhere, and you add these layers to your life and you look back and you have these delicious layering cakes and go, oh my gosh, you know, look at all the friends I've made, look at all the impact that I've made, you know, and try to help make the world a better place. So these layering cakes is a great way to kind of help push through fear.
Yeah. And that's so awesome. You said that. And you almost gave me a quick segue to just make a quick comment about the delicious layering cakes. I was thinking about the delicious fried rats or rodents on the mountain. And if you want to learn about that, just read the book. But you made me think about when I was writing my book that, and now it's not, I wouldn't say layers of cakes, but for me, it was layers of stories and the stories in my life and things that I did, things that I experienced. And there were bad things or sad things or negative things and there are positive things. But if you're learning something from any negative experience, is it really a negative experience? And but when you look back and I look at the layers of my life, and I'm like, it was better than I thought. And that's how I came up with the title Better Than You Think. Because if you look back and see those delicious layers, those delicious stories that we've learned from, how powerful is that, right?
Absolutely. And look at the layers. So all the great, think about all the layers and great experiences you had from writing your book, right? All the people you've met, all the people that have read it, that it's had an impact on, that you know or don't know.
Right.
And now we have the podcast here, right? I mean, think about all the cool layers that you have going on, which is awesome.
And I totally believe it's the Holy Spirit working. That's what I believe. And I know you had the Holy Spirit working with you on the mountain. I know that.
Absolutely.
So Bo, talk to me about, we mentioned this earlier briefly. I brought it up, but we talked about in another conversation, this broadening effect thing. Because I thought we talked about when we talked about fear at some point. But can you go into that a little bit?
Yep. This is very important. So for those of you listening, it's called the broadening effect, as Rob mentioned. And the research was done by Barbara Fredrickson, I believe. And it's about happiness. And, you know, this, I didn't quite know that, you know, I always kind of thought I was happy-go-lucky. And by the way, I've had more than my fair share of big mistakes too. But generally, I've tried to give more than I take, and I've tried to be a happy person. And this broadening effect is something that I speak about. I'm going to write about it in my next book. So here it is, audience. Happiness gives us a real chemical edge on the competition. I want to say that again. Happiness gives us a real chemical edge on the competition. Okay. So what they did is the researchers, they primed individuals to be positive or negative. So they prime you, okay? This group's going to be positive and this group's going to be negative right before the study. And then they asked them to look at a series of pictures, okay? And the pictures had, you know, so they looked at all these pictures. And the people that were primed for negativity only saw, you know, 30 or 40% of what was on the photograph. They missed key risks and key observations that were on these photographs. The people that were primed for happiness, for positivity, saw 100% of the risks and the opportunities and the key observation on those photographs. Isn't that amazing? So our mood can change our visual cortex. So that's the part of the brain that's responsible for sight and processing information. Okay. So our mood can change that, our visual cortex. So the broadening effect literally helps you not be so nearsighted or myopic, and broadens your view, and you can the benefits of this are unbelievable. So the broadening effect is one I highly, highly recommend that people look into and give it a shot.
So let me ask you this then. It's all based on your mood is going to determine or dictate how you see things, positive or negative, or make more negative or more positive than depending on where you are. So if Bo wakes up in a bad mood, is Bo saying to himself, I'm in a bad mood, how am I going to see things differently than if I was in a good mood? And then if that's the case, then you say, okay, how do I change my mindset from a bad mood to a good mood?
So a great book out there for people is called Miracle Morning. Miracle Morning is a great book. Highly recommend it. So generally, do I wake up sometimes and have some fear that, you know, do I grab my phone too quickly before I do my morning, you know, my morning kind of practice? Yes. Yes, I do. I'm human. I make mistakes, you know, often, but generally, you know, not to list everything, but a gratitude practice is one that has a lot of scientific research and benefits behind it. And you simply can wake up and say 5 to 10 gratitudes out loud. You can write them in a journal. And then you kind of set your intention today. Like today I'm going to have a great day because of these things. So that can take someone 5 minutes. It can take someone 2 minutes, or you could turn it into much longer. And then I always like to end the day with gratitudes as well. But yeah, Rob, I also wake up sometimes and grab this phone too quickly and get sucked in. And then I could lose a day where I'm not as joyful and as happy as I could have been.
Yeah, so I think you're going to appeal with your comment about Miracle Morning. A lot of realtors listen to this podcast, and a lot of these realtors know the book, you know, Miracle Morning, because it's been brought to their attention through this whole real estate community. So thanks for even touching on that. And that was, I did not pay Bo to say that, by the way. So it's interesting. Have you ever heard of the 5 a.m. Club, Bo? It's similar to the Miracle Morning.
Yep. I have read the book. I like the book. I think it's a good book. Like all books, right? I think, newsflash, right? That, or Mr. Obvious comment here is, when you read a book, you're looking for the nuggets, right, that are germane to you. A lot of people, and I think he even says this in the book, you don't have to get up at 5 a.m., right?
Right.
Maybe if your routine is 6 a.m. or 9 a.m. or 2 a.m. or 2 p.m., whatever it is. But yeah, that's a good book too. Do you like both books, or what do you like?
I like both books. I don't know if either author would ever listen to this podcast or not, but I like both books. The Miracle Morning, I was already doing. The Miracle Morning is more real estate related, or to real estate people, I think, because that's who it was directed to. But the 5 a.m. Club, I really enjoyed. What's Sharma? I forget his name. I forget the author's name. But anyway, Robin Sharma is his name. I'm looking at the book on my shelf over here. So yeah. I have it close by.
Hal Elrod is the Miracle Morning.
Exactly right. So and maybe we'll get him on his podcast one day. We'll see. But it's so you have to have those routines, is what you're talking about. And when you have those routines and you're digging into those routines, it helps, I guess, lift your spirits. It helps put you in a better mood. Is that a fair statement?
It is. Yep. And you have a good routine, I'm assuming. Routine. And
yeah,
any nugget you want to share, Rob, to the audience?
Yeah, sure. It's fine. I appreciate you asking, because I leaned over and I got my gratitude journal right here. I try to write 5 or 10 things a day. What I don't do is in the evening. I probably should do a better job in the evening of like closing the day down. But I get up in the morning. I get up at 4 a.m. I'm not 4 a.m. I used to get up at 4 a.m. Now I'm getting up about 5 a.m. every morning. And the first thing I do is I'll read scripture. I'll meditate and pray. I'll go write in my gratitude journal anywhere from 5 to 10 things. And then I will do a little journaling myself. What's happened the day before? How did I feel? How did I think? What could I change? How could I be better? And stuff like that. And then I write about eight notes every day. I write notes to people, friends, and family, whomever I had experiences with the day before. And then I work out and eat, and I'm on my way. And so I believe by 8 o'clock every morning, I've won most of my day, pretty much. And it's a discipline, and it's a discipline of doing it. Some people think, I can't do all that. What are you, crazy? But it's just start. Maybe read one page a day. Cause I do. I didn't even include there that I read 20 minutes. I read 20 minutes of a book every morning. So it's like, it's just start. If you can't read 20 pages, then read one. If you're a slow reader, then, don't read as many, but getting into a discipline of something every day and every morning, starting in the morning, I think is vital to the success and the mood of your day. Fair enough.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So I don't know if you had a question right now, but I was going to ask you one more thing here.
Yeah. I was going to say something I think that I think the audience would want to hear. So the power of a good question, right? And Rob, you know this, cause you keep asking great question after great question.
Thank you.
And I think there's a great book out there called The Great Questions Leaders Ask.
Uh-huh.
And so I'll give you a fun example. So there is a restaurant. I could give a mountaineering story, but I'm going to give a restaurant story because I've used this in mountains too.
And they can read your book, right? We're going to plug that when we're finished here.
For sure. So there's a restaurant. It's called, it's a really nice restaurant in California. Okay. It happens to be called French Laundry. Okay. And I wanted to get into it. Okay. I wanted to go, and I'd heard about it. And you need to make a reservation. I don't know what it was, 6 months in advance. And I missed the window, and I was going to be in San Francisco, and it just was really hard to get a reservation. So we went to this. So we found a kind of a place near it. And I said, you know what, let's just drive into French Laundry. I just want to see it. I want to actually just see, is it this hard to get in? So I walk in there, and there's, the person behind the, you know, dressed with a tie and very professional. And, you know, clearly they were the leader, right? They were the leader, the Commodore of the, of this restaurant. So I introduced myself and asked them their name. And I said to the person, have you ever knowingly helped a person achieve a lifetime dream?
What was the response?
All right. Have you ever knowingly helped a person achieve a lifetime dream? And they kind of looked at me and I said, think about it. And today, if you did that today, for the rest of your life, you could say, man, I helped someone achieve a lifetime dream. You know, that'd be pretty cool. And he looked at me and he said, you know, I guess I haven't. I said, well, today's your lucky day.
I get it. I didn't get it right away, but I got it.
Yeah. Today's your lucky day. You're going to help me get into this restaurant.
Did he help you get in?
Yeah, he did.
That's so good. I'm sitting there waiting for this profound thing, you know, and then you help me get in a restaurant. It's you helped him achieve a dream.
Today.
That is so funny. But, you know, Bo, and we say that, you know, with some humor there, but it's pretty cool because a lot of people listen to this podcast that I know that are in real estate. We're in this community that we get coached and we talk about this thing called the journey wall. And it's like you look back 5-year increments of your life and what all the positive experiences you've had, what failures you've had, what lessons you've learned, and who has impacted you in those 5-year increments in your life. And the last thing is, do you feel God was part of it? But so you go back and you look who has helped you. But then if you flip that, you can go and think, okay, who have I helped? Whose journey wall am I on? Who have I helped achieve one of their big dreams? So I appreciate you sharing that and let me segue into that. But hey, Bo, before I let you go, I do want to mention something. I'm going to read something else from your book here because I thought this was profound, and this is for anybody, right? You're a guy that had a learning disability, I guess. You were dyslexic, and you had your struggles, your fair share of struggles as a kid. But this is when you were on the top of the mountain, Vincent Massif. Is that how you pronounce it?
Yep.
And that's in Antarctica. And how cold did it get there, Bo? Minus what?
Really cold. I mean, I don't know, minus 20, 30, 40.
I know you said in the book, you say it gets as low as minus 100 degrees at points. You know,
It does. Absolutely.
You were just trying to be modest there, right?
Yeah. I don't think we didn't experience that, that minus 100, but we experienced pretty darn cold.
Yeah. So I'm going to read this real quick so people can hear this because I think this is so important. You were at the top of the mountain with a friend of yours, Rich, and we were just exchanging pictures. You took his picture, he took yours, and then you were holding the Kellogg flag, which was the school you were going to, right? I think it was. And then you said, I felt so proud both of myself and of the great institution that I was attending. While learning how to deal with people, I was also learning how to struggle. And if that sounds like a negative aspiration, it isn't. Struggling is part of life. We struggle every day to achieve, to survive, and to be happy. And learning how to deal with that is one of the main keys to any measure of success. And again, it's about deriving help from hardships and taking risks to do so. It's what shapes us. To me, that was such a profound paragraph that as soon as I read it, like, I'm going to share that on the podcast. So thank you for sharing that. And you've been through your struggles. So what would you say to everybody else? I mean, again, it's all there. Everybody's bucket list is different, right? It doesn't have to be climbing Mount Everest. As you put it earlier, everybody's Mount Everest is different. What would you say to people who are fearful or struggling to take that first step?
I would say that there's two types of pain in the world. There's the pain of regret and the pain of discipline. And one of them weighs a heck of a lot more than the other.
Oh, I love that. Is that a quote from Bo? I love that.
Nope. It probably isn't, but it's a quote that I really love. And whoever said it, we need to give them credit and praise.
That's okay. But thank you for sharing it. So, hey, Bo, before we leave, got to ask you one last question. Is there more chiseling going on in Bo's life? And what does that possibly look like to you?
So I'm going to, I'm writing a couple books right now, which is pretty, very fulfilling for me. I talked about one of them a little bit earlier. I'm going to go to Ecuador and climb and ski the two tallest peaks in Ecuador, which I'm really excited about. And then my two sons and I have two boys. So I do a father-son trip with each boy once a year. And then I do a father-son's trip also once a year. And they end up being about 9 months, Rob. So basically every 3 months I'm doing a trip with one of my sons, and that's keeping me, chiseled and engaged and fit and really trying to suck the bone marrow out of life here.
And I love how you finish that, suck the bone marrow out of life, because it's like one of my things is, like, I tell people, I don't want to die. I don't want to die with gas in the tank. I want to be empty. I want to be on empty, which means I did suck the bone marrow out of life, right? So, Bo, if people wanted to get a hold of you, or you're open, one, are you open to it? If they want to reach out to you, two, how would they get a hold of you if that's the case?
So if you're interested in, if you're interested in the book, the first book I wrote called Die Trying, One Man's Quest to Conquer the Seven Summits. It's on Amazon. It's on Audible. My website is just www.boparfit.com. There's a contact button there. If you have any great story to tell, or you want to pick my brain about something, I may turn around and pick your brain on something too. As you can kind of get a feel for my personality, I like to be a two-way street, but happy to help anyone that's listening in whatever form or fashion they need help in.
Bo, thank you so much, man. It's been an honor. And I'm so excited. I'm very grateful that I've gotten to meet you on the retreat. I'm grateful that we've stayed in touch. And I can't wait to stay in touch with you the rest of this God-given life and learn more about Bo and his experiences and learn from him and help myself get chiseled in the process. So, Bo, thank you for doing this. And until next time, everybody, let's go get chiseled.
Thanks, Rob.
You just got chiseled with Rob Comodari. To like this podcast, share it with your friends, and subscribe so you don't miss any episodes. Also, you can find Rob's book on Amazon, Better Than Equal.